I don't know, guys. I just feel like Titanic could have been better with The Rock. Am I crazy?
You know, I don't think you're too crazy, Dave. Which character would be replaced by The Rock?
Hello.
Oh my God. I wasn't expecting you. We weren't watching a cartoon, so I.
That's the problem.
I'm sorry. I've gotten your letters from Citadel. I know our animation output is lacking. Things have been tough at Sector 2. I'm not going to lie. We brought Ryan back to life recently, but we are getting on the animation thing. I promise you.
Speaking of Ryan.
Yeah.
I heard he had a collection of sorts.
Oh, you mean Ryan's recommendation shelf?
Damn right.
Yeah, I want one of those.
Of course. I would never deny you a recommendation shelf, Hoof.
We don't have room for that, Dave.
Shut up, Ryan! Ryan, shut up. God, what would your shelf be called?
I'm thinking the Hoof Collection.
How'd you come up with that?
I mean, we already have a Criterion Collection.
Yeah, it can go right next to the Criterion. Equally prestigious.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movie-less wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
I say we get rid of the Criterion Collection and just make it the Hoof Collection.
All right, that's enough, Eddie. You suck ass. All right. All right. So, Hoof, what will be your first entry into the Hoof Collection?
Let me think. Something dark. Something black.
Something Disney?
Yes. A movie called The Black Cauldron.
Have you heard of it?
Now available to own on video cassette.
The Walt Disney Company is proud to announce one of its greatest adventures ever is now on video for the very first time. Introducing Disney's 25th animated classic, The Black Cauldron. Come along on an incredible adventure with some exciting new characters. The brave warrior Taran.
I'll protect you.
The beautiful princess. The mischievous Gurgi. The magical pig Henwin. The fiendish creeper.
I always get blamed for these things.
And the evil emperor, the horned king.
Soon the black cauldron will be mine.
If the horned king should find it, nothing could stand against him.
Now, Taran and his friends must be the first to find the black cauldron and save the kingdom.
The black cauldron can never be destroyed.
It's a legendary tale you'll want to add to your collection.
You're quite right.
Full of classic Disney action. And fun for the whole family. For the first time ever on video, the timeless adventure of Disney's 25th animated classic, The Black Cauldron, now on video. Available only for a limited time.
All right, well, that was The Black Cauldron. I'm your host, David Snyder. I'm joined by Ryan Caldwell.
Hello.
Michael Althaus.
Hello.
And our glorious leader, Morten Hoof.
Hello.
Well, all right, that was Black Cauldron, the inaugural recommendation for the Hoof Collection. And Hoof, right off the bat, I'm sorry I got to do this, but if I start dozing in a movie, that's bad news. That's a bad sign.
I don't think
for
you understand
movie.
The proper way to view art, Dave.
I do. No, when it puts me to sleep, that is a very bad sign. Especially when said movie is only like an hour and 20 minutes. That's not good.
I thought it was bad news. Yeah, when the movie was actively tucking Dave in.
Was I the only one that sort of had this experience? Was I sort of lulled to sleep?
I didn't feel sleepy, but, you know, I don't know if I'd say this is a perfect movie. It's not a train wreck. It's not a disaster, but I think you're forgiven for being a little dozy during some of it.
I think your attention span is probably not calibrated correctly.
Well, see, my attention span is calibrated to interesting characters, characters that have chemistry with one another, a good story. Three things that this movie lacks, in my opinion. Like, the lead character, Taryn, in this movie is one of the most unlikable, douchey heroes I've seen in a movie, animated or otherwise, in some time.
He's sort of like a worst-case scenario Luke Skywalker.
Yes.
He never really rises above anything. He gets the sword.
We're getting too hard. We gotta hear the guy's the person that likes that loves this movie, you know? Before we get too crazy on this.
Well, there's
Jeez
a lot
Louise,
to love.
You guys. Calm down. Calm down.
I'm sorry, Ryan. You're the diplomatic one here. And I probably shouldn't be insulting this. I probably shouldn't be insulting the very first movie of the Hoof Collection, our glorious benefactor here. I apologize. Yeah.
I see the Raiders taking their bats out.
Let's hear his take on it before you do that. Come on.
I'm sorry. I'll put my claws away. So Hoof, what are your thoughts on the Black Cauldron?
Well, I think that the story is pretty basic. All the characters are pretty basic, but it just has enough aggressively good stuff going on that the imagery and the style of the movie should more than compensate for a lot of the stuff. Like, there's a lot of influences you can tell from this movie that went on to the Lord of the Rings movies, specifically like Gurgi, the way he talks, probably really influenced the development of Gollum. And then there's a couple other scenes, like when the dragon creatures are kind of chasing the pig, that remind me of the Nazgul. So I think that there's a lot of influences that are you can see in the movie. And I can see the construction of the movie is, like I said, it's pretty basic, but it's very, very cool. It's very stylish.
It's you mentioned Lord of the Rings. To me, this feels like Lord of the Rings light. Like it's sort of the same thing. There's like this thing that'll give you ultimate power. He has to go try to stop it and destroy it. Like you mentioned, the Nazgul, like the dragons and shit. You got the Horned King that has Saruman.
Well, which one are you talking about?
Saruman.
I can never remember the damn name. They're basically the same name.
Saruman's the guy. Saruman is the eye.
Yeah. So Saruman is basically the Horned King in this, right, and Gorgli, or whatever the fuck his name is Gollum. He talks just like him.
Gurgi?
Although I can see what you mean about the influence. Gurgi, yeah. Fergie, whatever the fuck its name is. I don't know. I hated this movie. I'm sorry.
Wow. But,
It's basically like, that's basically Gollum. And I could tell that, you know, obviously, I wouldn't be surprised if they grabbed influence as far as the voice for Gollum goes from this movie. But
do you not think it kind of like plays, it's just like a loop? Like this was influenced by Lord of the Rings, and then like, you know, and it wasn't the cartoon before this, too? Like the Lord of the Rings cartoon?
Yeah, I think that was the 70s, wasn't it? That first Lord of the Rings cartoon?
Yeah, the Hobbit. And then it probably is like a never-ending loop. And then I bet this looped into the movies, you know, and then back again, almost in a weird way. Or at least like the stories and the Tolkien books and stuff. So.
This movie's certainly not devoid of talent and good stuff, I suppose. But
we should touch on the production of this movie, because it's nuts.
Yes. Because that, to me, this is one of those movies where the making of the movie and the subsequent legacy is more interesting than the movie itself. But before we get into that, we should probably get into the actual story, lack thereof, of this movie before we get into that. So,
what the fuck are you talking about, lack thereof? There's a perfect story going on. So you make it sound like there's nothing.
Well, Hook, enlighten us. For anyone who hasn't seen The Black Cauldron, please regale us with the tale.
There's a cauldron. There's an evil guy who wants to find it because he can destroy the world. And he gets, he's going on a quest, or he sets out his minions to go find the cauldron. There's a little kid who is in charge of keeping a pig who shows visions. The visions can lead to the cauldron. And they capture him, they escape, and then they get chased again.
The end.
They get captured again very easily, and then Gorgie falls into the cauldron, and then the Horned King falls into the cauldron, ship blows up, and then the movie's over. Am I about right here?
Yeah, what's the problem?
It's just like I said, Lord of the Rings light.
It's just kind of basic.
Yeah, it's a kid's movie.
Well, it's very basic. And my problem is I hate the characters. There's not one likable character in this movie.
The villain is great. And the old man is great. That's true. The pig is pretty good.
I like the princess when she comes in.
Yeah, the princess is all right. The princess should just be like the main character. I feel
she
like
comes
she's
in way
like
too late. I feel
a
like
more capable hero than the main character. Like the hero, he never doesn't like when he gets the cool sword. And normally in a movie, like when Luke gets like the lightsaber, it's like a powerful lightsaber that he has to learn how to wield. But this one, like the sword just does all the fighting for him. He's kind of like riding the sword. So the hero is a little klutz.
Yeah, I kind of have him listed as my note for him is that I think he could have been fine. I think, you know, just it's kind of like your basic kind of, Luke hero. That's sort of like, the farm boy or the pig. He's an assistant pig keeper, kind of thing that like becomes a hero. But I think what it is, and I think I think you're right on something, David, that he's not really likable, is that he feels like a bad actor, like the way he's like read. Like his voices or something.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if that's just a choice. That's just a weird choice that comes off weird to me. I agree with you. That he kind of feels like the person doing the voice, it's hard to tell how old he is in a weird way. I don't know. There's something strange. I think just a bad voice choice with him. I think if it was more likable, you'd like him. So.
Speaking of bad voice, was I the only one that got the impression? So this movie came out in 1985, which is only four years before The Little Mermaid, like Disney's revolution.
It's the same team.
It's the same team?
Yeah. So I feel like we like have to talk about some of the background of this movie real quick. I'm like salivating to talk about this.
Like I want a fucking Hearts of Darkness for Black Cauldron.
Well, there is, kind of.
What?
There's a movie called, it's on Disney Plus actually, called Waking Sleeping Beauty. And it's about like this whole period of time, basically.
Mm. Oh, okay.
It'd be worth checking out.
Yeah, it's good.
But yeah, the story of this is it's based on the five book series, what's it called? The Pygmalion. Chronicles of Prydain.
The Chronicles of Pygmalion.
And apparently it's like completely different. And it was bought in the 1970, I think. The Disney company bought the rights to it, and they were gonna, this was gonna be like their next Sleeping Beauty. This was gonna be like the fantasy movie that would kind of like bring him back to prominence. And when they put together, they had like a concept artist put together a bunch of like storyboards and concept art. And when the guy who was running Disney at the time saw it, he didn't have enough faith in the team and was like, no, you can't do this. You're not like good enough to do this. You're not ready. So we're going to make like some other stuff first, like the Fox and the Hound or whatever. And one of the, probably the best person on that team at the time was Don Bluth. And he ended up getting frustrated and left and took with him like a quarter of the whole team, probably like the best people. So it's kind of like this could have been something very different if this had been made in 75 when they were kind of ready to do it with this really ambitious.
Tim Burton was on the team with that and everything.
Was he really?
Yeah.
They basically like ended up losing their most talented people because they wouldn't let them do what they wanted to do. So by the time this eventually got made, it was 15 years after they bought the rights, and it was a very different movie at that time. They like told the storyboarder to come up with something around like 1980, like finally just scrap everything, come up with a new plot, and it was very different than the original one. It was very different than the books. The Horned King is like a minor character who dies in the first book. But he ended up making him the main villain. And I saw that the quote was he made him the main villain because the horns were cool. He thought that horns were good on a villain. And yeah, so that's what we have today. I think there's like, that is obvious in this movie. I think there's like a lot of crazy art going on at times, but it's really uneven. It reminds me of like the Beach Boys, like a few years ago, like probably 10 years ago now, they finally put out like the Beach Boys presents Smile, and it was really cobbled together. But there were parts of it that was like, wow, this is like amazing. You can kind of see what could have been. And I think that's what this is like. There's stuff that is really cool, but it doesn't feel like a finished like movie. It feels like something that was kind of like, well, let's just rush out what we have.
You said it was based on a book or book series like that. When that popped up at the end, based on, I was just like, oh, okay, so maybe this makes a little more sense. And maybe they were like, maybe they didn't have confidence. Well, it didn't seem like anyone in the studio like had confidence in this movie at all. They're like, fuck this movie. It's no, I guess like looking at Chattopedia, it's like one of the movies that Disney tried to bury, apparently, like quoted as the movie Disney tried to bury.
Yeah, it didn't come out on VHS until like the late 90s.
Yeah.
At the time when it came out, they said it cost $25 million, which I think would still make it the most expensive animated movie of all time. But after the fact, they basically like lied. It was twice as much. It was like $45 million or something like that.
And made about half of that, if I'm reading correctly, in Chattopedia.
Yeah, it was a huge... When it premiered, it was behind... number one was European Vacation. It was behind that. It was behind Back to the Future, which had been out for like a month, and behind a re-release of E.T.
Well, the big one that they always pull off with this is that it was beat by the Care Bears movie the year it came out.
Ooh.
That's not good.
That almost, it's basically the reason why they say that is this: Disney almost went bankrupt, or the animation department at least, from this movie. And it's all taken in that Waking Sleeping Beauty doc, where basically after this, they moved the whole studio out of Burbank, like they took like a warehouse like in the valley or something in L.A. Like it just like, you're like, let's get rid of this. Like Eisner and Katzenberg were just like all back and forth about this. Like it's a crazy thing about
was
this
Eisner. I thought Eisner wasn't there when they did this.
He wasn't he was there. I think he wasn't quite the CEO yet or something like that.
Oh, okay. Like, yeah. But that guy Katzenberg, it seems like the problem with this movie is it started out as like this ambitious artistic thing. Like people were comparing it to Fantasia, you know, like the arty Disney movie. And it was sort of forced to not be that because the guy, Katzenberg, who was running it, was like so traditional and was like, no, yeah, it needs to be like a normal Disney movie. And so they're trying
There's
to
like no singing.
Shove a square peg into a round hole.
I think it almost feels like a movie without like missing the singing in a weird way. Like almost like they
it
took
feels
out
like a movie like that's missing a lot. Like I said, like
I do
say,
agree
like,
that it's pretty beautiful, like some a lot of stuff, but it's inconsistent. I agree with that.
Well, yeah, it feels like a movie that was based on like a big book or book series. And like because the studio didn't have any faith in it or didn't seemingly want to make it, they're like, just pull chunks out of the first book or many of the books, whatever. And just, I don't know, the greatest hits. Just get some of the chunks, put them in this movie, whatever. Like I'm also reading on Chattopedia that there was a lot of footage deleted. Like it's like all this behind the scenes trivia is really starting to paint a picture of a movie that could have been. And I'm wondering if maybe that's one reason why I'm not liking this movie, because it feels like very much patchwork. And one thing I was going to say earlier, like the animation is great, but there are moments where like it's the animation strikes me as something not made in 1985.
Yeah.
Like there are times when the animation flows like something made in the 70s. And also one thing that I really was a sticking point with me and that was baffling, because again, this came out in 1985. This is well into like stereo sound and whatnot. There have been leaps and bounds in sound technology. Was I the only one who thought like the dialogue specifically sounded very tinny and like seemingly recorded like in the 50s or something?
I remember, I think I read that it was one of the first animated Disney movies to be in like stereo or something like
that.
Oh,
really? It's weird because the sound effects and everything sound great, but the dialogue specifically sounds very bad.
If it was
like the sound quality sounds bad, and also, I was like, what the fuck is happening?
If it was one of the first movies to be in stereo, that could make sense why it would not sound great, because they're still like figuring out the technology.
And also,
well, first animated films to be in stereo.
Yeah, and then it was also one of the, I think the first one that used like the anamorphic lens thing,
That was interesting.
And yeah, I think that's beautiful and really cool.
Well, this movie had a lot of firsts. Like, again,
CG.
First CG in an animated movie, like with the little ball. And like, did you notice like early on in the movie when Terran's chasing like the Nezithul, or whatever the fuck dragons those were, when he's on top of the mountain looking off at the castle in the distance, the clouds in the background are like real clouds.
Mm.
Did you notice that?
I didn't.
They look like real clouds. There are moments in the movie when it looks like they like put these animated characters in like sort of real environments.
That's kind of one of the things I have written down, is it almost feels like they're on like a green screen or something.
Yeah, that's what it felt like, yeah.
And I kind of have like, that's the first time I put, because I'm like, oh man, in my notes, I'm like, this is really kind of beautiful the way this is. I love these backgrounds, and it's kind of nice how kind of quiet the movie is and stuff. And then there's this big, the first chase with the dragons and like the pigs and stuff, or chasing the pig. And that's the first time I think when the animation feels a little bit inconsistent, where it kind of, it kind of changes from like the kind of quiet, you know, farm setting, and then gets into like the real fast paced kind of thing. And there's some cool, like, elements there, but it kind of feels like there's like pieces missing in a little bit. And you know, I appreciate them taking the leaps, you know, that they tried with this for sure.
Yeah, that moment I'm forgiving of, because clearly they're experimenting, and I could tell instantly that they're like, you know, that those backgrounds looked real to me, and it looked like a blue screen thing. So I'm forgiving of those elements. They're experimenting. Like, like I said, there's a lot of firsts in this movie. This is the first PG animated Disney movie.
And this is 80s PG. Like, there was some stuff in the movie that, you know, maybe we can get into, but I was like kind of surprised. And that's when I was like, oh, wait a minute. This is like 1985 PG. This is harder than a PG of. There's like a lot of like really suggestive stuff. There's like a gag where like one of the characters is like stuck in between the buxom bust of like a singing character. There's some gnarly violent stuff, which apparently that's what most of what was cut out was, more violent stuff, which
impalings, decapitations,
skin being torn off of people,
hearts being ripped out.
If only it happened to Gurgi.
Oh God, can we talk about Gurgi for a second?
Yeah, this is my note on Gurgi. I have Gurgi equals Jar Jar, and I have an old man monkey dog ?
Wilfred. I'm like, what the fuck is Gurgi?
And I said Wilfred Brimley with Gollum's voice, basically.
Yeah.
And the
like moment where I was kind of like unsure, like I think I don't like Gurgi. And there was a point where he was like, he sees the princess and is like, ooh, hey princess, and I was like, oh man, this is weird. Like,
and the thing I think you gotta think about, like, Goh said earlier, it's like, you know, it's a kid's movie kind of thing. And there's a good shell here, I think, for a lot of this stuff. But I think it's just hard to like, it's crazy how it's not really, I mean, they're memorable in a weird way, the characters, but not necessarily like, it's mostly like, in like, oh, that was weird, wasn't it? Instead of like, I can't remember like lines really in this. There's one line I have written down, but I'll get to that later. It's pretty funny.
Yeah,
like, I'm surprised Terran like brought Gurgi back to life. Like, I'm surprised he didn't throw Gurgi into the Black Cauldron himself. God damn, that character was insufferable.
The best thing he did was speaking of PG things, I mean, we do have suicide in this movie. Gurgi like decides to kill himself. I think a lot of the stuff with Gurgi is what struck me as like, it seems like from reading about it, like I can imagine this stuff being kind of like the newer filler things. Like a lot of Gurgi feels like stretching for time more than anything else.
Well, one thing I have is like
that whole scene when he's like, I want your apple. Hey, I was like, yeah, that goes on for so long.
One thing I was like, cause there's Wilfred dog. And then there's also the little goblin guy, and I was like, do we need two little guys like running around, like two little like,
oh dude, when they introduced those fairies or whatever, like the I can't remember what it was called, LV or whatever the fuck his name was, like I checked out, and we were an hour in, I was like, there's way too many fucking characters in this movie, I don't like the characters I got as it is, like I checked out at that point when the elves or fairies or whatever the fuck they were showed up. And the hush falls over the podcast crew.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right, and then that's the kind of thing where I wonder, like, is this, like, book three, where we're, like, in the series, this
exactly
is where they come in, but it's, like, weird to introduce, like, a whole, it's like going to see the Gungans in the, like, end of, towards the end, or not even the Gungans, because it's, like, something totally new that they're introducing, like, at a weird time. The pacing of that whole thing is, it is very weird.
Well, I've been noticing, Hoof, you've been sitting in your chair, grinding your nails into the armrests, much like the Horned King. What are your thoughts on kind of the characters of this movie? Was there anyone you gravitated to or anyone that you loathed?
Well, I love the Horned King.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Horned King.
Easily best character of the movie.
He. So you guys talked a little bit about kind of the, not different phases, but the way it changes moods and stuff like that. And it does kind of just hop around back and forth. And it's quite a juxtaposition for sure. But I think that, so I live for the stuff at the Horned King's lair, basically, like all that stuff is just so cool.
Yeah.
And it's so stylish and it's just so dark and evil and it's awesome.
Is that why there are so many skulls like around the entrance of a Citadel?
Yeah, that's why.
Inspired.
But then you have the light tones that go way on the other side of the spectrum in terms of tone, where it's kind of silly and goofy and just very, very kiddish. But I think that's from my perspective, that's an interesting technique because it appeals to the kid who's say like 5 years old, and then it manages, because it lures him in with this kid stuff, then it assaults him with the dark stuff. And that's an interesting technique for the film to take. And I think that's, for me, that's when I was a kid and I watched this movie, it was like, this is scary stuff. And I probably maybe shouldn't be watching this stuff, or this is older than I'm ready for or whatever, when I was a kid watching this. And I think that that kind of makes the movie a little bit of a taboo or something. Like it's very deceptive in what it's offering in terms of when it gets to the Horned King's lair.
Dude, the Horned King looked like a mix between Skeletor and the devil. Like the Horned King is gnarly. And it's like, I'm like, was this the stuff Tim Burton worked on? Cause like, holy shit. Like it is dark. There's like fucking, like he comes in, like every entrance of the Horned King is amazing. Like the lights go out, puffs of red smoke. It looks like fucking like demon shit swirling around, and he just pimps in, and just like you never really see his face. You see like red eyes and his skull face. I'm like, voiced by John Hurt. How awesome is that? Like, I want a whole movie just with the Horned King. Just I want a Maleficent with the Horned King.
Oh yes, if they do a remake, if they ever did a remake of it, that's what they should have done. Just focus on the Horned King. That's the best part of this movie.
They
for
did.
Sure.
They made, Rise of Skywalker is a Horned King movie.
And the pacing is really different too. When you have the Horned King, it's usually very slow. Like he talks very slow, and everything kind of takes its time. But when you get to Terran and you get to the light side, so to speak, it gets very, very fast and very jumbled and very, hip-hoppity.
It's kind of like a weird, one of my things I kind of talk is he gets like the quest where which is the craziest thing is that his pig like has visions. And that's like basically the thing everyone's looking for is this vision pig.
I was waiting for them to reveal that the pig was like turned into a pig and used to be like a human or a wizard.
I thought
or
so too.
Shit.
I thought it was,
I love
the
that it's just a pig
something.
That has visions.
Yeah,
I know.
Which is pretty cool. But he kind of goes on the quest and he needs to like, you know, do something with it. And then it kind of like turned to like the evil castle lair like really fast, I thought. And then I was like, oh wow, we're already at the end of this quest. And it's kind of interesting where it kind of like, you know, and usually in a quest like this, or, you know, Wizard of Oz or something, you're going to meet your friends along the way, you know, to the thing. And this kind of like, you got to the end or to the end castle and you met your friends in the castle and then you leave the castle and then go back, which is kind of cool. Kind of, it's different and interesting. It's weird. It's just interesting for this movie. It definitely doesn't really play with the, it's like tropey, but also doesn't play with the usual tropes when it does stuff like that. And I don't know if it's the case of just kind of, we need to get through this fast, or this is the only, you know, backgrounds we have are this castle or something. We need to make the whole thing in it. I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I get the feeling that they had a lot of awesome artwork of the castle lying around, and
more of the movie was like the castle, but it kind of plays like as if it's on the way to it. I don't know. It's weird. It's hard to explain what I'm trying to say, but I don't know if that makes any sense.
Castle looks so cool.
Those backgrounds are great, and it's so cool, and it's weird seeing it's cool seeing the stuff like in HD now, and like how the cells, like the animated cells on top of those backgrounds, like pop so hard that it almost makes it this, like back in the day watching this on like VHS or probably even on film, it probably didn't have necessarily this crispness to it, I think, that has now, that almost makes it look like you can see how they did it now. I don't know, does that, you guys see what I mean?
No, for sure. Yeah. Like it seemed like the animation, like I was looking at the edges basically of all the characters, and they looked like kind of rigid. Like, whereas if you're watching this in something like VHS, it probably would be smoothed out.
Yeah. This was in the Xerox age of Disney animation. And I think that they were like, I don't know exactly how it worked, but they were using Xeroxes in, to animate the actual characters.
Well, that's how they do it. Like, you kind of, you play it on a, you know, you have a background and you have the characters on like on a clear cellophane, and then you know, basically that's how you do the scans. That's how they've always done it, you know, kind of thing.
But this whole era of like, it was this and like 101 Dalmatians and the Fox and the Hound, it had a more rigid character design than like, say, Sleeping Beauty, where it's a little more like flowy and stuff like that.
Interesting. Yeah, it's so, I don't know, I like, it's fun watching something like this now with having it be, you know, crystal clear HD. And the thing that's crazy is that this wasn't even really available because it was like stuck in the vault for 20 years. So
yeah, Disney really didn't like this movie, or they've had a disfavorable attitude for it, because like the Blu-ray has never come out, which is something that I've been waiting for. And they've kept it hidden, so to speak. And it's been, they put it on VHS, but, that's how I used to watch it. But yeah, it was like hard to find or not readily available. I guess it was on, maybe it was on iTunes for a while, but yeah, it's always just been kind of a black sheep in Disney's family.
Do you think it's like they were planned on, maybe like trying to remake it or something? 'Cause I feel like in a way that, it's almost as if it's like, they were like, we want to do something with this someday. We just don't know what. And I don't think the movie comes off like offensive or something like Song of the South that you need to like, you know, hide it away. It's just, it's weird that they're almost just like, eh, we don't know if anybody, there's interest in it. Like it wasn't really played enough, you know, throughout those years for it to gain like this following. So it's pretty cult, and maybe they want it to be like that. I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
Well,
if so Disney's...
apparently it played really well in Japan. Like, I guess they liked it so much in Japan that Disney World in Japan had like a whole Black Cauldron, like not a ride, but one of those walkthrough things, you know?
Yeah, I've heard about that. I've heard that's like, it was like a really interesting, very interactive kind of ride that was, I've seen stuff from it. It looks awesome. Like very, very leans into like the more metal castle aspects of the movie.
Oh yeah. And the dark thing. And it kind of had a Star Tours sort of component where like it basically like selects someone in the audience as they're walking through to become the hero. And they get like the sword and they do all the cool shit at the end. It's just like, apparently it did pretty, I mean, box office wise, it didn't do very well, but it was received better overseas. And supposedly, I don't know if this is true, it's from the old IMDb archives, but supposedly this was like a big influence on Miyamoto when he was making Legend of Zelda. And like, he took components of this movie, specifically like the Horned King, as inspiration Ganon. For like Ganon and stuff.
That's crazy. I could totally see that. I also saw, too, this was really, it did box office wise, it did really well in France. It was really popular there. So, yeah, I mean, I guess maybe the more, you know, the more refined tastes of Ferners, maybe.
The Ferners.
maybe they like some of this and, you know, I don't know, maybe they weren't bothered by Gurry as much. I don't know, but, Maybe the French dub of Gurgi is less annoying. I don't know.
Well, I think, I mean, Gurgi is I think intentionally annoying, and I mean maybe that's a good or bad thing, probably a bad thing from you guys' perspective, but I think the way that, you know, Gurgi speaks is very interesting, and like I said, there obviously it took a, I'm guessing it influenced the way that they decided to do Gollum, and I think that the, you know, Gurgi's character in and of itself, I mean, the fact that he ends up killing himself is also really interesting in a kid's movie.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he basically, yeah, like, they set up that the Black Cauldron, the way to reverse the spell is someone has to jump into it of their own volition and they're going to die. And Gurgi has, like, this moment where he's like, Gurgi has no friends. You have friends. Gurgi, die. And he, like, yeah, he straight up, like, commits suicide in the cauldron. That's pretty gnarly. I wasn't expecting something like that to happen. And, yeah, I mean, it is cool to see stuff like these kind of themes in a movie that's so otherwise at times lighthearted.
Yeah, so I think...
Well, I had a question. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, for me, there's a lot of breadcrumbs here that are really, really rewarding. You have, you know, Gurgi suicide. You have the Horned King. You have the animation, I think, is really beautiful. Especially, like you mentioned, the real clouds. I noticed that, too. That looks awesome. And I just think it creates an atmosphere that's really rewarding. So I think, for me, I look at this movie as... from the perspective of a child, and I think back to how I watched it, and now I think the movie itself is very serviceable, but the imagery, at least when we get to Horned King, is very cool, and I think that so as a whole, it's not exactly groundbreaking or anything like that, but there's a lot of very precious things in there that for a child can be very memorable.
Well, I had a question. So we were talking about like how Gurgi sacrificed himself in the Black Cauldron, and then later the Horned King throws himself in and basically kills himself, and this whole castle blows apart and whatnot. So I had a question, and it's a story question that probably doesn't have an answer because, like I said, it seemed like they just pulled chunks out of seemingly various books in this series. But so Taran decides at the end the witches come back. The witches who told them to locate or gave up the Black Cauldron basically in exchange for the magic sword. They want the magic sword back, but they're thinking they're going to trick Taran because the Black Cauldron's useless, so they'll just get it right back in addition to the sword. But instead of asking for his sword back, Taran's like, can you bring Gurgi back to life? He comes back to life. They're happy. They walk off into the sunset, so to speak, or I should say like the acid trip future fortune telling of the pig that we see. So what happens to the Black Cauldron? It's just like, so the witches get the Black Cauldron back in exchange for bringing Gurgi back to life, and then they just don't do anything with it?
Yeah, I think it's just back where it was before. Like, the whole thing is the Horned King is gonna like bring the Black Cauldron, but I think it's just like back into hiding to be used.
So are they basically like Red Skull in Avengers? Like, they can't do anything with it. They're basically just its keeper.
I think the witches are concerned with things beyond our mortal plane, and they're just like hanging on to it.
Yeah, they just like hoard all these magical items or items that used to be magical. Because we see when they first meet the witches, they have all those cauldrons, right?
Yeah, they have like the whole thing is like you think it's like one of the cauldrons amongst the layer of cauldrons that they have, but it's actually buried underground. That was a cool moment. Like, that whole sequence I like a lot. I like the three witches too. They're like basically like the they remind me of the Fates from Hercules. They all have like very interesting designs, like mischievous witches kind of thing. It's cool.
Well, yeah, it's just the bummer thing is like, it's not very, the story isn't really allowed to expand a little bit. Like I really get the sense, like, yeah, you mentioned maybe like the fairy characters were maybe something from book three. I wonder if like the princess was something from book two, because they all come in at weird points in the movie. It's just unfortunate because there's this whole idea where it seems like almost every character has like a magical object that they just sort of have, like the, we haven't even talked about this guy, fucking Flim Flam or whatever his name was, the disgraced bard. He has like, I guess like a harp that like talks kind of.
I got the harp was like, it would break if he told a lie.
Okay. So it's just like, these are things. And then the princess has this glowing orb thing that follows
Princess
her
Zelda
around.
Has a Navi, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. maybe another Miyamoto pull, I don't know. But it's like, I really get the sense now, knowing the troubled history of this movie, that maybe these were all elements that were explained and like in the book. Well, obviously they were probably explained in the books, but probably, I get the sense they probably make up like a grander story. Because like, it just seems odd to me that all these characters seem to have a magical object and it's not referenced really at all. It's like, well, yeah, I just have this.
And I don't even know if it needs to be like explained, but I think there's a lot of stuff.
Well, no, maybe not necessarily. I don't mean so much explained, but I get the sense that it's part of a bigger world that we never get to see because that they never bothered to go into it.
Well, I like it because it's like world building. It just means that there's these magical creatures and magical items out there in the world.
I think you're right.
But with fantasy, you got to know the rule set you're working with. Otherwise, it's just like it doesn't make any sense. So I think like it could be a little bit clearer on like what are the rules of this world.
Well, it's almost like the there's so many little things and characters and like you know items like that and you know cauldrons and this witches and stuff that there's so much of it, but there's not really enough given to like a one thing. I guess in a way that it almost feels like nothing, if that makes sense. Like it's like there's like so much that like, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of like a mess a little bit where there's not necessarily like why not just focus on this magic sword or something and what it's from or whatever. And then we can, you know, not really have to care about all the other stuff, I guess. I don't know.
No, that makes sense.
I don't know. But
it's because the sword does everything on its own. Like Taren doesn't do anything with that sword. He just holds it and the sword does all the work.
Yeah, he like rides the sword.
Basically, yeah. Like again, like it's just I feel like the sword was probably like the big thing of one of the books. It's unfortunate what happened with this movie. Like there's clearly a world here, but we only get to see like snapshots of it.
Can you imagine too if like it's 1975 and like Don Bluth is ready to like be on the lead on this and like what that could have been if they were making at the time like I don't know if you've seen the storyboards or the concept art for it, but it looks kind of like this, but it just looks better. Like and it's kind of insane the detail. Like they were going for like a kind of like painterly pastel look, and it would have been. I mean, the animation in this, a lot of it's beautiful, but it would have really been something else, kind of the original idea for this movie and, being closer to the books. And I think it might have even been, you know, part of a series of movies, too. It's a little frustrating because there's stuff here for sure.
It kind of like has this, it's funny making these Zelda connections because the main character has real... Well, excuse me, princess, from the Zelda cartoon. He has that same kind of energy, and it's funny to think about because this probably is just like it is Zelda, you know, the cartoon, you know, in a way. There was something else I was gonna say, but I lost it. I don't know. Oh yeah, like I guess it's like. Do you think like it feels? Really, like, we need to make a Disney cartoon for boys. Like, does it have like that thing where we're like, we can't have princesses and singing? Like, we need to make like a more, you know, like sell merchandise to boys or something. Does it have that feeling?
Think,
do you think that?
I think it's. Well, I think it's made by boys. Like, you know, it's all boys
well,
that
all,
made it.
They all were, even the princess stuff. You know,
so. And I think that. That just kind of came about naturally. I think what this was an attempt to do was let's make a serious movie. Let's make a movie that like this is going to like an Academy Award. Like this is going to be like an arty
stand the test of time movie. And I think just by the nature of it all being boys that made it, it did come out as a movie for boys. But I think the thing is that they made these
same boys, like a lot of them went on to make, like, you know, Beauty and the Beast, and that was not
because this was a disaster, and they're like, well, not that, like, we got to go back to the drawing board. So then they came up with Little Mermaid next.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and that saved them.
It is. It's wild to think this is basically that team. Like, this is the Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin. Oh, one connection I would draw straight line from this to Aladdin. The bread in the beginning of this movie is so lovely. I wanted to eat the bread. When they're in the old man's shed and he's like slicing off some of the bread to give to Taran as he goes on his adventure, I would have died to eat that bread. 10 out of 10 bread.
Do you think, speaking of like animated stuff, like what they look like, was Charlotte's, the pig in Charlotte's Web named Wilbur? Is that the name? Am I thinking the right thing?
I think so.
Is that the name of it? Does anybody know?
I'm pretty sure it's Wilbur.
I feel like it's like the same looking. I mean, I guess it's what a pig looks like, but it just looks like the same pig. I don't know.
Maybe they were lazy and just grabbed like the animation references. Really,
well, I don't remember when that came out. If it was after or before, like the cartoon.
Yeah, maybe they just like used the animation cell.
Let me see.
Yeah, like they just reused it or something.
Oh, it was before 1973 with Charlotte's Web, the cartoon. Wow. Okay. I don't know why in my notes I have written down in quotes, and this was been a quote from the movie, and maybe this was the Horn King that said this, because it says, "You bring news of the pig," and I thought that was really funny. I don't know.
It is that there's some cool scenes with that pig. I love when the Horn King gets him, and so the whole thing is like this pig sees visions, but it's weird. Like, it's not just that he has visions. It's like you have to take the pig and he puts his head into like a pool of water, and then the pool of water projects the vision. And there's a gnarly scene when the Horn King gets him and just like shoves his head. Like, it's pretty aggressive, just like dunking his head into the water to like force the vision of where the Black Cauldron is. There's a lot of stuff like that where I'm watching and I'm like, ooh, like that is not something.
He tries to cut the pig's head off for a second too.
Does he? Guillotine.
Oh, yeah, that's when he.
Oh,
threatens.
Yeah, they put him against the block and there's like the dried blood on the block already.
Pretty rad.
Well, and then we see Taran bleed too when. When he was chasing the pig, when the pig was getting chased by the dragons. And he grabs onto the tail, and then the other dragon swoops down and puts him in the ground.
That was a cool sequence.
Yeah, he's like bleeding. Well, maybe I guess it could be mud, but it was coming out of his mouth. So
I think it was blood. Yeah, yeah, and apparently that's what was cut from this movie. Is there was like a decent chunk of scenes that Jeffrey Katzenberger was like, no, we can't put this out. Like, this can't be seen, and cut it. And I really wonder like what badass shit was cut from this movie.
Well, there's that part when like the dead rise, or like the skeletons kind of come out, and it's really kind of cool because it's like layered and stuff. And I have a feeling that like ends real fast. And I feel like that might have been like where maybe something continued, because it seemed like really cool and like kind of like trippy, like the way they kind of did it with like the those particle effects they kind of do with the smoke effects. And then like it's like layered, like weird. And then it kind of like then they just kind of die. Like, they just kind of walk out the door and die.
Deflating it would be to be on the team of this movie. Like, because I bet some of that stuff was like probably, like you were saying, Ryan, like it's weird and probably took a lot of time to make. And then to just have like this guy come in who like doesn't really get animation and is like, edit around it. Like, people were like, you can't do that in an animated film. Like, we can't just like edit around it like a normal movie. It's a bummer. And it seems like those scenes are kind of like lost to time. I don't know. I did a little bit of digging in the chat archives, and I don't see that they're really available anywhere. You know, Disney doesn't care enough to preserve this stuff. And yeah, it's kind of a bummer.
It away right next to Song of the South.
I feel like they're more embarrassed of this than Song of the South. Like, Song of the South was like made them. It has a ride. It made the money.
As a huge song.
Yeah, zippity-doo-dah.
The ironic thing about this is, like, they thought zombie skeleton soldiers was too intense, yet years later in Lion King, they'll straight up have Nazi imagery, like, with the hyenas marching and, like, looking to their glorious leader, like, straight up Nazi imagery, and it's just like, okay, I guess that's fine.
And
it says the film was ultimately cut by 12 minutes, with existing scenes rewritten and reanimated for continuity. Many of the scenes cut involved extended character interactions, but other trims involve violent content, including the undead Cauldronborn, who are used as the Horned King's army in the final act of the film. While most of the scenes were seamlessly removed from the film, the Cauldronborn sequence contains rather recognizable lapses because the removal of the scenes of the Cauldronborn mauling the henchmen, as well as one of them being dissolved by the mist, creates a jump in the film soundtrack. So,
that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, so crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah, there's that whole
release
scene
the cauldron cut.
The cauldron cut.
Yeah, I mean, imagine Gohoof, how gnarly this would be if it didn't get cut to shit. You know, it'd have been so cool.
Oh yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, you know, hold out hope that one day we'll get it, but. For now,
it'd be cool to even see that stuff like not finished, you know, like in like it's usually deleted animated scenes are kind of more storyboardy than, you know, kind of than they are.
Well, and it sounds like it was there, too. So maybe it would just be a kind of thing where it's like the audio is not mixed great or the color correction isn't great.
The color isn't there, you know.
Like yeah.
Black and white. Crazy.
How cool is the scene? So at the end of the movie, the cauldron is sucking sucking everything in, and the Taren and the Horned King are both like being sucked in, and eventually the Horned King, like, his cape gets caught and he's like drugged down, and there's probably the most metal scene in like a Disney movie where the Horned King is like holding on to the cauldron and it's sucking so hard that the like dead flesh on him starts to be torn off, and it's like literally like his skin and guts are being sucked from him, and you just see like the bone underneath.
His skin tears and you see the bone underneath, and he's just like trying to resist it, and then his skin just gets sucked in, and then you have like the bones just, you know, standing over the cauldron before it's sucked in. And I think it turns like bright red too. And then
if that was what they left in, like think of what
I have a feeling, like I think if they even left in everything that was cut, you guys probably still wouldn't like it. But for me, it would just be more of the awesome stuff.
I like this movie, Nick. I might have sounded more negative. I think at the end of the day, it's good. I just think it's like really uneven. Like it feels like something that wasn't finished or wasn't you know, started as one thing and ended up being something else.
Oh, I definitely agree. And I don't think this is a perfect movie by any stretch, but I think that there's a lot of cool stuff here that's like, you know, as a kid, I think Ryan's talked about this when you watch Godzilla, you know, Godzilla movies, you know, when they're talking, you kind of play with your toys or whatever, and then Godzilla yes. shows up. You know, it's the same type of thing when I was a kid, you know, when Taren or they were jumping or bumbling around or whatever, it'd be like, okay, whatever, you know, maybe play with my toys or whatever. But then the Horned King comes up and like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm curious how it plays for like kids today and stuff. I don't know. It's interesting. You may know any kids in the wasteland we can talk to?
Well, I feel like the radiation turned them all into Gurgies.
They'll probably love it.
Like, you don't really know exactly what they are. It's like, is it a dog? Is it Wilfred Brimley? Like, what is it?
Yeah, why an old dog looking thing? Why old? Like, he has a big mustache.
The question like should be, what the hell is design. Goofy? It should be, what the hell is Gurgi?
Yeah. What the hell is this thing?
It's such a strange thing. It reminds me of like the in freaking Pagemaster. It's like the fucking talking books is just doesn't make sense. It's like who came up with that design idea, you know? And that's kind of what Gurdy's face looks like to me a little bit. Like the little goblin guy, I like that little dude. It reminds me of like, I don't know, like
I liked him too.
A classic Disney character, and like the way he's animated, and then I don't know, something about Gurdy.
You need
a
good shitty like lackey for the villain, like a overly fawning, like, yes, master, everything you say, master.
And yeah, I don't know. Gertie kind of comes off that way as the villain's lackey a little bit. But
speaking of that guy, I don't know where to like shove this in, but one of my favorite scenes in the movie that was not like metal shit was the scene of the lackey like talking to himself to get up the strength to like.
I like that too.
he's like going to deliver the news that everyone got away, and he's like, "You're going to tell them that they got away, and you're not going to let them boss you around this time." And he's like about to like forcefully knock on the door, but then he like and like chickens out and ends up walking in and. Yeah,
that's basically me every time I go to request more cheesy gordita crunches from Morton Hoof.
Yeah, well, now you're not going to get any.
I know. I'm sorry I spoke out of turn about this movie right off the bat. You were so excited when you're like, I want this to be the first of the Hoof collection. And I was just like, oh, man, this is going to be so good.
This is going to be a year of the Fresca menu.
I'm like, come on. Hold on, David. Hold on. He's going to kill us all.
Well, hold on. I gotta pull a Taren. Like, if I can't have Taco Bell, at least have Mike. At least let Mike and Ryan continue to have Taco Bell.
I think he, yeah, Taren. I like that name, Taren. I don't know. He looks like they must have been designing like from the same animated thing, because I feel like he has the same haircut as both Arthur from Sword in the Stone and Mowgli for some reason. I don't know.
He reminded me like his clothes looked a lot of. He looked a lot like what's his name from How to Train Your Dragon?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Like the clothes looked almost identical.
I'm
memory.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good connection. I bet you.
Hiccup. Hiccup. He looked like Hiccup.
I bet you. I think Coos on to something, because I bet you there's a lot of people, like even today, like on How to Train Your, or not today, when they made How to Train Your Dragon, was that like they probably were people that grew up with this, the VHS or whatever, or like the, or saw this, like, you know, and were inspired by it, especially like Zelda stuff. But I think that stuff is probably, that's like the good thing.
I could see a lot of like animation nerds who like went on to do things using this movie as a point of reference. Like the all the castle stuff and the Horned King, I could see like the Dark Souls folks being way into that. Like it's very like Dark Souls at times.
Ryan, do you think, well, you and I have kind of talked about that book, Save the Cat, and do you think that Taren doesn't have that moment?
Maybe you're right. I don't know, because he kind of, I feel like he gets jumped into it pretty fast, and then his pig gets stolen, and then it's kind of it. And when he runs into Gertie, does he save him or something? Like,
no, he drops his apple, and Gertie steals the apple, and then he takes his apple back. So he doesn't really do anything.
Takes a bite out of it.
And I'm trying to think of what he does before. Yeah, you're right. Like, he just feeds the pig, really. Like, there's not really a moment where you kind of get on his side. He's always kind of like the little asshole a little bit.
Yeah,
you're
so
waiting
I'm thinking,
for him to go full Gollum.
I think we're supposed to care about Gertie when he decides to kill himself. And then
I'm talking about Taren. Like, we're trying to figure out a way like to get you on Taren's
so
side. Basically.
For those who don't know, there's a book called Save the Cat. And it's a screenwriting book. And it talks about how to write a character or write a story, a whole movie basically. But basically the key premise is that your character needs to do something in the beginning to show them that they're likable. And so like saving a cat, it shows them that they're a good person or whatever. And
like Ripley basically saving the cat and aliens kind of thing. Or isn't it an alien? Which one? I think it's an alien.
Oh, wow. I was way off. I was thinking, this is embarrassing, but I was thinking Lethal Weapon 3.
Maybe.
I mixed it up, because there's a moment in the beginning of Lethal Weapon 3 when they're going to disable a bomb like in a parking garage, and like careless Riggs like cuts the wrong wire, and there's like a cat like there, and he looks up at Murtaugh, is like, Raj, save the cat or get the cat. I literally thought that was a line from Lethal Weapon 3, but I'll go sit at the kiddie table now. I'll excuse myself. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's like the trope of like saving a cat from a tree, but I think it's also referencing like the in aliens and stuff, or aliens. But
that's a more classy reference.
Well, I was pretty much done, so I think that that's probably why Taren is just not likable character, because he just doesn't do anything like that. He's self-absorbed from the very beginning, but you know,
his defining character trait is he wants to be like big and famous. Like he has that. He has that like song, but it's not a song, where he's just like tending to the pig and like talking to himself about how he wants to be like a big famous knight.
It's kind of crazy too, because he has that call to adventure, and it's in the first like few minutes of the movie where they're like, you have to hurry up and go. Like, there's not really like a thing. He's just kind of hanging out still on the farm, and they get the visions and stuff, but there's not necessarily, there's like a chunk missing in that beginning, I think, for you to really latch on to him as a character that you can like. And I think
the
that's what it is.
The most noble thing he does is he cleans the pig for a second.
So yeah, I think you're missing like, you know, in that, you know, that first act, like a little bit of just getting to know him a little bit, him to like do something maybe on the farm that makes you like root for him. And then also like the call to action is so fast and quick that you're kind of skipping a few steps of like the hero's journey when this movie is kind of like, you know, using that so much as like a template that when you break that, you know, that wheel, it almost it never really keeps going, you know.
Maybe we're looking at this wrong. Maybe the hero of this story is the Horned King.
Yeah, maybe.
It really needed, like this is where music would have come in handy. Like, it could have had like a somewhere out there moment. Like, they could have, like, it really, you know what I mean, to like, yeah, sell the character to the audience.
Yeah, and it's almost, it does, it feels like, and the movie is pretty short, so it's like almost like they, if it had singing in it. And when I was a kid, I was not about the, I didn't like musicals. I've come to, you know, it took only a couple of them I liked, so I probably would have hated it anyway. But it's like, it's almost missing those like five songs that would maybe make the movie like a little bit over an hour and a half long.
Oh man, they could have had a great song with the, remember the bar scene with all the minions, the henchmen? Mm. That would have been a good like rowdy, you know, like to the Horned King.
Oh yeah, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, I think that maybe that's what it was missing. Was just the, I mean, if you don't have the songs, you need some other stuff in there.
It was missing a little bit of like the like joie de vivre and like zest for life that a lot of the best Disney movies have.
Yeah, it has the nice gruesome dark metal, but I think the stuff that's supposed to be more like lively like doesn't get lively enough for you to be like on board. You start kind of like passing out or something. I don't know.
That was me an hour into the movie. I was like, when they introduced the elf characters or fairies, whatever they were, I was dozing. I was like, this is bad. I was dozing through the fucking climax. Like, my eyes kept like shutting.
What?
When fucking Gurgi sacrifices himself, there's a moment where I dipped and then I looked back up again. And then suddenly the Horned King falls in and everything falls apart. I'm like, so I guess he jumped in. What?
It's the best part of the movie.
What's happening at the very end when they like are walking away and like, there's like this like silhouette of them, like,
oh, so it zooms out and it shows them in the vision of Henwin the pig.
Mm.
So
yeah, they're back on the farm.
The old guy is like looking into the bowl with the water that's hypnotic or whatever. Yeah. And it just shows them, and he's happy that they're, you know, they made it.
Mm-hmm. I assume they're walking the back to the farm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird one for sure. And there's a lot of good pieces though. Just I don't think it quite comes together.
It's just an unfortunate case of what could have been if Disney had more faith in it.
Yeah, I think this, I go back to that original concept art and having people like Don Bluth involved. I think it's good. I think it's a fine movie. I think that I would say it's a good movie that has a lot of like bad stuff in it and it's uneven, but on the whole, I think it's fine. But I think it really could have been something special. I think that had the producer had the faith in the team to just make the movie they wanted to make, it could have been one of the all time greats.
Well, would you Ryan, would you recommend this?
I don't. It's tough because I don't not hate it either, and I do think there's some really cool stuff going on, but I don't know. I don't think I would. I don't think I think it's worth checking out for animation nerds and like just kind of like seeing. And I agree with you guys where like I'm all about this behind the scenes kind of stuff, and like seeing this could have been the end of Disney basically. Like this, I think it's really interesting and cool to see what that was, and that this was beat by the fucking Care Bears movie that like looks god awful. I remember having it when I was a kid too, but comparing like the animation wise, like this is so much more craft going on, but I don't think it really works quite like together. I think they're, but I don't know. It's fun to see. And I love seeing in seeing how much it was inspiring to like stuff like Zelda. And, you know, like you said, How to Train Your Dragon is kind of cool too. So I don't know. I think for some people like animation freaks and stuff, I would recommend it too, but not your like, I don't know, your average Joe. I wouldn't recommend this to probably.
Average Gertie.
Average Gertie.
Well, I almost would recommend this movie as like a double feature with whatever documentary you mentioned, Ryan.
It's called Waking Sleeping Beauty. And it's kind of like, basically is the whole idea is that it's, you know, the guys that sort of brought Disney back to life, you know, kind of thing. And it's, I think it is like,
is that like
produced.
A Disney movie? Like, is that documentary made by Disney? Like, cause you I'm wondering like if they're hesitant to get into some of
isn't
the
it
like
on Disney Plus.
It is. And I don't think it was a Disney movie, but there's people involved that are in it. I was surprised it's on Disney Plus, to be honest. Cause
yeah, because part of the story is like Disney making bad decisions. And
it is. And it gets into that, which I think was interesting. And I was surprised that it was on Disney Plus for that. But it kind of does come around.
Was it Michael Eisner saying like, you know, I may have gone too far in a few places.
Well, no, Michael Eisner was basically brought on right after this. So maybe I could see it. Michael Eisner being like, listen, like the guy before me, like really fucked up. But
yeah,
this is the previous administration.
Michael Eisner was the one saying, it's so dense. There's so much going on.
I inherited Obama's economy. Okay.
Eisner was CEO at the time is what I was just reading, but he wasn't really part of like the animation division. I think that was more
Katzenberg.
And so he was in charge, and it was recent that he was at this time. But Waking Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm reading from the Chatopedia regarding that editing. You remember when we talked about Katzenberg, like slashing parts of the movie is too violent. Informed by what Katzenberg was doing, Disney CEO Michael Eisner called Katzenberg in the editing room and convinced him to stop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Eisner was like a pretty, like he was into this stuff, I think, and trying new things. You know, people like him most of the time, but
most of the time,
but I don't know. I would say like, it's not like, yeah, that documentary though, I don't think it's produced by Disney, but it's directed by a former Disney like producer. And I think there's connections there a little bit, because it does get pretty damning, like what they do. And I mean, it does like at the end, maybe the reason why Disney put it out, Disney Plus is because it does have a happy ending at the end. Cause
yeah,
it's like,
they
we
do
brought
wake
it back.
Sleeping Beauty. Yeah.
But I would check that out with this, because basically I'm looking at it right now. It says that the documentary takes place between 84 and 94. So it's that 10-year period of kind of just like bringing Disney back to life. So I don't know. It's cool. I'll check it out.
Well, hopefully that's something you'll allow, because that's the only way I think I would recommend this movie. I don't think Black Cauldron stands on its own as enjoyable enough. Like, I mean, if I were to recommend it, it would be as like a YouTube, like a short YouTube thing, like look at like a reel almost. Like, you look at these cool like Horned King moments. The Horned King cut. Yes, I would release this as the Horned King cut. But aside from that, I don't think it's just too patchy to stand on its own. Having said that, I don't think it matters. This is the Hoof Collection after all. This is your recommendation shelf. I don't have any sway in this store, especially when it comes to Hoof-related decisions. Hoof, you are the Michael Eisner in this case, so I really have no power here. This is your shelf. It's almost like your shelf is like fucking like neutral territory or some shit. Like, I can't do anything with it.
Well, Mike, would you recommend this movie?
I would. I don't think it's like the best thing in the world, but I think there's enough to latch on to here that's pretty that makes it worth its runtime of a mere 90 minutes. The stuff with the Horned King is awesome. The lair and pretty much the whole movie, the backgrounds are beautiful. So, I mean, if you don't care about animation, I guess skip it. But if you're at all interested in animation and fantasy stuff, I think it has enough good in it to warrant the time with it.
Yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly then, Mike, because I mean, for me, this is it's a serviceable movie with a lot of stuff in it that's just aggressively my shit. So
well, I guess I'll be dining high on the cheesy gordita crunch this year.
Yeah, whatever you need, Mike, just let me know.
Well, see, I was Gergi. I was Gergi walking up. It's like, you know, no, I'm not going to recommend this fucking movie. I'm not going to let Hoof push me around. I did not like this movie. I got to say so.
I will choke you, Dave.
I'll choke myself, Hoof.
He's already choking himself. He's in the closet. Oh, good. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I agree. It's cool. It's fun to see. And you know, I mean, if we're still getting Disney Plus over here somehow in the wasteland, it's still broadcasting, so it's worth watching on there. You know,
I mean, you have to come out to our area if you want Disney Plus. I mean, the broadcast only goes so far. You know, but anywho, yeah, check us out in Sector 2. Like I said, this is the inaugural entry into the Hoof Collection, as he so delicately put it, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. Sorry, I was trying to say. But that's going to be the first entry in the Hoof Collection. I hope that you come back and submit many more of your serviceable films into the Hoof Collection. I really enjoyed it. You can check us out on facebook.com/apocalypsevideo or Twitter at apocalypsevideo. They're all still active. Chad keeps them up and running, thank God. We need a social media presence out there in the wasteland. But I think that's going to do it for this inaugural installment of the Hoof Collection. I guess that's what we're calling it. I'm your host, Dave, signing off from Sector 2. I don't know how to end this episode.
Can someone do their best Gertie impression or Gertie, whatever?
Oh, crunchies and munchies.
You bring news of the pig.